Epilogue. A Whisper on the Chalk. 2 days after the battle, Tiffany led one of the farm horses up to the hills above the farm. It was a perfect early autumn's day. There was a wonderful cerulean sky, buzzards screaming overhead, and a clear view towards the distant mountains of Lanka, their tops still covered in snow even at this time of year. There were always a handful of sheep up in this part of the downs, whatever the weather. At this time of year, there were half-grown lambs, kicking their heels and chasing about while the ewes grazed nearby. Here was a well-known landmark for those who knew, a special place for sheep and farmers alike, the place where Granny Aching now lay beneath the turf. Only the iron wheels of her hut and the old pot-bedded stove with its chimney were still visible, but the ground was holy. Tiffany came to look at it every time she felt the world grinding her down, and here, where the wind never stopped blowing, she felt she could deal with anything. With the help of the horse and a strong rope, Tiffany hauled the rusty wheels out of the turf where they had been embedded and painstakingly greased and coaxed them back together. Rob Anybody had watched her for a while after she had rebuffed his offer to help, then departed with a puzzled look on his face, muttering about geezes and what he'd like to do to them. The following day, Tiffany went to visit old Mr. Block, the local carpenter. He had once made her a doll's house when she was a little girl. Now she had a bigger home in mind. He was pleased to see her, but was startled when he discovered what she wanted from him. "Mr. Block, I would like you to teach me to be a carpenter. I am going to build myself a hut, a shepherding hut." The carpenter was a kindly man and offered to help. "You are a witch," he said. "I'm a carpenter. A little hut like that wouldn't take me long. Your granny was very good to our family, and you helped my sister Margaret. I'd be happy to do it for you." But Tiffany was very definite. "That's nice of you," she said, "but all the work on this hut must be done by me. It will be mine from top to bottom, and I will pull it to where the larks rise. And I'll still be a witch when anyone should call, but there I will live. On my own," she thought to herself, "for now, anyway, for who knew what the future might bring." And her hand crept to her pocket, where she had Preston's latest letter to save her. And so Tiffany learned carpentry every evening after her day's work was done. It took her some weeks to finish it, but eventually there was a new shepherd's hut stationed close to Granny Aching's grave. There were 3 steps up to its wooden door, a horseshoe and a tuft of sheep's wool, the sign of a shepherd, already nailed in place there. And the roof arched over a small living space into which she had built a bed, a little cupboard, a few shelves and a space for a washbasin. From the bed, she could see out of a small window, see clear across the downs right to the horizon, and she could see the sun rise and set, and the moon dance through its guises, the magic of every day that was no less magic for that. She loaded up the old farm horse again with the bedding from her little room in the farmhouse and her few possessions, said goodbye to her parents, and headed up the hill in the late afternoon sun. "Are you sure, Jicket, this is what you really want?" said her father. "Yes, it is," Tiffany replied. Her mother cried and handed her a new quilt and a freshly baked loaf of bread to go with the cheese Tiffany had made that morning. Halfway up the hill, Tiffany turned to look down at the farm and saw her parents still arm in arm. She waved and carried on climbing without looking back again. It had been a long day. They were always long days. Later that evening, once she had made her little bed in the hut, she went out to collect some kindling. The white cat, Ewe, followed close behind. The little tracks of the chalk were very familiar to Tiffany. She had walked along them with Granny Aching years ago. And as she reached the wood at the top of the rise, Tiffany thought she saw somebody walking through the dusky shadows under the trees. Not just one person alone. There seemed to be 2 figures, both strangely familiar. Beside them, alert to every gesture, every nod, every whistle, trotted 2 sheepdogs. Granny Weatherwax, Tiffany thought, side by side with Granny Aching, thunder and lightning at their heels. And the little words in her head came unbidden. "You are the shepherd's crown, Jigget. You are the shepherd's crown." One of the figures looked over and gave her a brief nod, whilst the other paused and bowed her head. Tiffany bowed back, solemnly, respectfully, and then the figures were gone. On the way back to the hut, Tiffany looked down at the cat, and, on a sudden impulse, spoke to it. "Where is Granny Weatherwax, you?" There was a pause, and the cat made a long meow, which appeared to end meow-everywhere, and then purred, just like any other cat, and rubbed her hard little head against Tiffany's leg. Tiffany thought of the little spot in the woods where Granny Weatherwax lay, remembered, and knew that you had been right. Granny Weatherwax was indeed here and there. She was, in fact, and always would be, everywhere. There was a long stream of visitors to the shepherding hut once it became known that Tiffany was back on the chalk for good. Joe Aching came up to deliver some messages and a new letter from Preston, and bring Tiffany some things her mother had decided she needed. He looked around the neat little hut with approval. Tiffany had made the space very comfortable. He looked at the books on the shelf and smiled. Tiffany had left Granny Aching's Diseases of the Sheep at the farm, but both Flowers of the Chalk and the Good Child's Book of Fairy Tales had their place by the little shepherd's crown he had given her. On the back of the door was a wooden peg on which hung her witch's hat. "I reckon you'll find some use for this too," her father said, as he took a bottle of special sheep's liniment, made according to Granny Aching's recipe, out of his pocket and placed it on the shelf. Tiffany laughed and hoped her father hadn't heard the cry of "Crivens!" from the roof of the hut. He looked up as some dust fell down from where Big Jan sat on Daft Woolly to silence him. "I hope you haven't got woodworm already, Tiff." She laughed again as she gave him a hug to say goodbye. Mr. Block was an early visitor, too. He puffed his way up the hill and found her settled in with you, the cat, sitting on her lap while she sorted rags. Tiffany watched nervously as the old carpenter looked around and under the hut with a professional eye. When he had finished, she gave him a cup of tea and asked him what he thought. "You've done well, lass. Very well. I have never seen a boy apprentice take to carpentry as quickly as this, and you are a girl." "Not a girl," Tiffany said. "I'm a witch." And she looked down to the little cat beside her and said, "That's so, isn't it, you?" Mr. Block looked at her suspiciously for a moment. "So, did you use magic to make the hut, miss?"
"I didn't have to," said Tiffany. "The magic was already here." The end.
1948 to 2015. Afterward. The Shepherd's Crown is Terry Pratchett's final novel. It was written in his last year before he finally succumbed in early 2015 to the embuggerance of posterior cortical atrophy. Terry had been diagnosed back in 2007, the year that he wrote Nation. At that time, Terry thought he might have less than 2 years to live, and that brought a new urgency to his writing. He had never been a slouch in this respect, but now things were measured by the cost in writing time. If demands for his presence took him away from writing, it had to be really worthwhile, such as feeding the chickens or attending to his tortoises. He had so many more books he wanted to write. It says a lot for Terry's resilience and determination not to go down without a fight that he wrote 5 more full-length best-selling novels between Nation and The Shepherd's Crown, as well as collaborating with Stephen Baxter on 5 Long Earth novels. And Terry was still developing new ideas for books right up to his final few months. We will not now know how the old folk of Twilight Canyons solve the mystery of a missing treasure and defeat the rise of a Dark Lord despite their failing memories, nor the secret of the Crystal Cave and the carnivorous plants in the Dark Incontinent, nor how Constable Feeney solves a whodunit amongst the congenitally decent and honest goblins, nor how the second book about the redoubtable Morris as a ship's cat might have turned out. And these are just a few of the ideas his office and family know about. Terry usually had more than one book on the go at a time, and he discovered what each was about as he went along. He would start somewhere, telling himself the story as he wrote it, writing the bits he could see clearly and assembling it all into a whole, like a giant literary jigsaw, when he was done. Once it was shaped, he would keep writing it too, adding to it, fixing bits, constantly polishing and adding linking sequences, tossing in just one more footnote or event. His publishers often had to prize the manuscript away from him,
as there was always more he felt he could do, even though by then he would be well into the next story, which was tugging at his elbow. Eventually, the book was sent to the printer, and reluctantly, Terry would let it go. Terry had been thinking about the key elements in Tiffany Aching and Granny Weatherwax's last story for a few years. He wrote the pivotal scenes while he was still writing Raising Steam, and then rewrote them several times as he shaped the rest of The Shepherd's Crown around them. The Shepherd's Crown has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and all the bits in between. Terry wrote all of those. But even so, it was, still, not quite as finished as he would have liked when he died. If Terry had lived longer, he would almost certainly have written more of this book. There are things we all wish we knew more about. But what we have is a remarkable book. Terry's final book. And anything you wish to know more about in here, you're welcome to imagine yourself. Rob Wilkins, May 2015, Salisbury, UK. Acknowledgements. Despite the effects of his Alzheimer's disease, Terry wanted to keep writing as long as possible, and was able to do so not least through the assistance of his fine editorial team. Lynn, Rihanna and Rob would most especially like to thank Philippa Dickinson and Sue Cook for their tireless help and encouragement that kept the words flowing. A Feagle Glossary, adjusted for those of a delicate disposition. A work in progress by Miss Perspicacia Tick, Witch. Big jobs, human beings. Big man, chief of the clan, usually the husband of the Kelder. Blethers, rubbish, nonsense. Boogle, see Schemey. Boggin, to be desperate, as in, I'm boggin for a cup of tea. Bros, porridge with a drop of strong drink added, or more than a drop. Be warned, it will put hairs on your chest. Bunty, a weak person. Carlin, old woman. Cludgy, the privy. Corbies, big black birdies known by most people as crows. Crivens, a general exclamation that can mean anything from my goodness to I've just lost my temper and there is going to be trouble. Dree, your, my, his, her, weird. Facing the fate that is in store for you, me, him, her. Een, eyes. Eldritch, weird, strange. Sometimes means oblong, too, for some reason. Fash, worry, upset. Geese, a very important obligation backed up by tradition and magic. Not a bird. Gonagall, the bard of the clan, skilled in music and stories. Hag, a witch, of any age. Hagger hags, a very important witch. Hagging, haggling, anything a witch does. Hidlins, secrets. Kelda, the female head of the clan, and eventually the mother of most of it. Feagle babies are very small, and a Kelda will have hundreds in her lifetime. Lang Syne, long ago. Last world, the Feagles believe that they are dead. This world is so filled with all they like, they argue, that they must have been really good in a past life and then died and ended up here. Appearing to die here means merely going back to the last world, which they believe is rather dull. Maupi, furry animals with white tufts as tails, making them easy to spot. Sometimes called rabbits. Good to eat, especially with a dab of snail relish on the side. Mudlin. Useless person. Pished. I'm assured that this means tired. Schemey, an unpleasant person. Scuggan, a really unpleasant person. Scunner, a generally unpleasant person. Ships, woody things that eat grass and go bar, easily confused with the other kind. Spavey, see Mudlin. Special sheep liniment. Probably moonshine whiskey, I'm very sorry to say. A favourite of the Feagles. Do not try to make this at home. Spog, a small leather bag at the front of a Feagle's kilt, which covers whatever he presumably thinks needs to be hidden, and generally holds things like something he is halfway through eating, something he'd found now that therefore belongs to him, and whatever he was using as a handkerchief, which might not necessarily be dead. Steamy, only found in the big Feagle mounds in the mountains, where there's enough water to allow regular bathing. It's a kind of sauna. Feagles on the chalk tend to rely on the fact that you can only get so much dirt on you before it starts to fall off of its own accord. Whaley, a general cry of despair. That is the end of The Shepherd's Crown. It was written by Terry Pratchett and read by Stephen Briggs.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this.